Off the Ball. GAA.
You pick up the energy, you pick up the, I suppose, the gusto, the drive, and if the vibes aren't right in Dublin, it's going to be really, really obvious.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do?
He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up tonight, we're going to be getting the dream team of Andy Dunn and Gerry Thorney together here in studio for a Monday night rugby debrief on the weekend Six Nations action. We will be talking about Italy versus Scotland and the brilliant game that was on Saturday afternoon, and then subsequently get very worried about Italy and the threat they're going to bring to Dublin this weekend as they play Ireland in round two of the Six Nations. From 9 o'clock, another dream team potentially in the offing, Carl Anka and Dion Fanning are going to lock horns on VAR and other such subjects over the course of the football show between 9 and 10. And over the course of the first hour, we'll be bringing you our extended news round, as we always do on a Monday evening. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Stephen Doyle will be leading that Monday news round. How are you, Steve-o?
Good evening. I'm all good, thank you.
Michael McCarthy is here in studio. Hello, Mick.
Hi, Owen.
And Dion Fanning is in early. Dion, how are you doing?
Good, Owen. How are you?
Time to lace up those gloves, get ready for a head-to-head with Carl a little bit later on.
I'm fired up.
Yeah, Mickey, we were chatting to you about this earlier on. You seem fired up as well. I'm not sure what Steve-O feels. We'll hear your commentary later. You sounded pretty fired up in commentary. I've kind of like hopped on board this idea that we should be irate and angry with VAR every week. I've kind of accepted that it should be a story.
I like it because we used to have arguments where I would be given out about VAR either on air or before the show off air, and you would just be like, oh, I can't. You would bristle. You would actually bristle.
I just shrug my shoulders.
And there's a few you like it, and I think if we get to that point where everybody thinks a VAR conversation is boring, then we'll stop talking about it and we'll continuously just let it ruin the game. But I think why emotions are so riled up, I suppose, for this particular event is, I was saying this earlier, right? I was talking outside about the, do you remember the Spurs-Chelsea game? Because we were talking about Romero getting sent off all the time. And Spurs went down to 9 men and Ange started playing on the halfway line. And everybody remembers it because it's so rare in football that you see something you've never seen before. We've all been watching the game our whole lives. You know, there's unusual events, but there's very few unique events. And I think the ball and two players racing towards the goal is a unique, I think, is something we've never seen before. And I think it was so exciting that everybody went a little bit over the top when a very basic and easy decision was made. Like, you know, ultimately, it's not like, you know.
It was like curling, wasn't it, to make it top of it. It was like watching the curling at the Winter Olympics. All we were just short of was, you know, Holland and Szoboszlai to have their little brush thing out. And
curling would be so much better if they could attack each other going down the ice.
We got a new sport.
Yeah.
So did you see the clips over the weekend of that stupid sport now where there's like two heavyweight guys just run at each other and just crash into each other.
Yes, I must admit, like, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, we really hit
it's a new power slap, basically.
It's the bottom of the barrel now, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry, we've got sidetracked here, right? Yeah, yeah. yes, I did see you, Dana White's new thing. You're saying that part of the reason why you're so irate is that we were robbed of a completely unique moment.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm irate, but I think the reason Gary Neville, as you know, like Steve, I was commentating on it, so he had his own view of it. Those of us watching on TV were treated to Gary Neville, like just like shouting and crying about the nonsense of a VAR decision. When again, I just think that it was a pity that it just wasn't the goal. But ultimately, as the ball is about to be cleared off the line, Haaland fouls the player. You can't just give it because vibes or because you know, like two wrongs don't make a right or whatever. You know, like it's basically prison rules if you just decide that he fouled him so the other guy can foul back. It doesn't really work like that. Like,
no.
Nor can it.
No, I think one of the reasons, I think because like those few minutes were all so absurd. I think suddenly someone came along and it was like you were at you're having the best night of your life. You know, and then someone came along and opened up the curtains. Actually, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, you've got to go to work. You know, that's what happened. That's what happened when, you know, whoever was in Stockley Park got on the, you know, and said, look, you've had your fun. But now,
the problem is, Dion, it is 8 a.m.
That's what I was
going to
say.
You do have to go to work.
You've got Gary Neville and Dion and other people who I would normally not disagree with, like Dion, like Gavin Cooney, for example, who are screaming about the fact that I don't want it to be 8 o'clock, therefore it shouldn't be 8 o'clock, therefore you're wrong to send me to work.
But the point is that the referee, who is a highly trained professional, he knows the rules. He gave the goal initially. If he makes a mistake, so be it. He has made a mistake in I don't know what his thinking was. Was he thinking was this, you know, like maybe he was thinking, you know, two wrongs make a right and I'll give the goal. Who knows? But he gave the goal and then somebody come, and so that was the absurdity of the situation. The absurdity of the situation, because everyone loves when a goalkeeper is out of the goal and gets caught out, and you know that sense of drama, especially as Steve says, because you had this ridiculous shot that's just, you know, dribbling towards the line. It's not the normal shot that's well directed towards goal. So all that stuff that comes into play, I don't think people, it kind of just demonstrates what people want from these games. That's why people feel so, and I think that's why the you know, when people come along and start talking about the rule book, they get to the heart of the issue with VAR as well, because you know there's more to sport than just an absolute adherence, an absolute determination to play by the rules is important. But actually, this is the thing about VAR as well. It doesn't respect the referee. Like if you're involved in coaching kids or doing anything like that, you talk about respecting the referee. That's much more important than even the rules. It's like the referee's decision is what matters, not whether he's made a correct interpretation of the rules. What VAR is doing is actually going to create anarchy. You'll have little kids growing up thinking that they can somehow, you know, put an appeal in to somebody to have the rules re-examined. This referee doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's look at the video and we'll make a decision. This is what is happening with VAR. It is actually, it isn't about respect, it isn't about referees, it is about trying to find a rule that covers every scenario. And life of sport shouldn't work like that.
No, can I just say that, because I think there's two different sides of the argument here. I completely agree with that. I think that I would love there to be no VAR, for that goal to be given. But once it's examined in any way, I suppose, the idea that you could be angry with it when no other decision could be made. It's not a case of, like, rules are rules and therefore we have to make sure they happen for the, you know, that's better than exciting football. It's just that once it's examined, he was clearly fouled.
But that's the point, yeah.
Yeah, no, but that's exactly right. I would much prefer there to be no VAR.
One text has been in touch to say, lads, personally, I'm looking forward to a VAR-free weekend of FA Cup goal celebrations. Think a simple product is ruining the game as it's worked by Muppets. What kind of outrage will there be if Manchester City lose the title on goal difference by one goal. Well, what kind of outrage would there have been if the goal stood and Manchester City won the league by one goal yesterday?
Yeah, like the thing is, like the ref, in fairness to them, the referees can't win here, can they really? Because, you know, there's always going to be a complaint from one side saying, well, you should have done this or you shouldn't have done that. You know, like the thing is, like, initially VAR was kind of brought in because we'd had so many, you know, disallowed goals that should have been allowed. And it was generally down to an offside or something. So it all kind of, and actually the first thing really was goals going over the goal line and goal line technology brought in. Then the VAR is brought in to deal with offside. And then it goes further. And there's more rules that need to be, you know, kind of figured out using this video assistant referee. And it's just got to the stage now where, well, like the referees can't win, you know. They're like, I thought Craig Pawson did very well in that what was a really tense situation. This ball's rolling and rolling towards the goal. He plays the advantage, which, you know, people are always crying out for. He played the advantage, you know, and he played the advantage. Now, he was within his rights to come back then and send, you know, Szoboszlai off for what was a red card offence afterwards, but he allowed City. But then, you know, the VAR comes in, well, you know, we've kind of, and it's just like, oh my God, it's just kind of like, and the other thing as well, excuse me, but this has totally overshadowed two major offences committed by the goalkeepers. Like, the goalkeepers have got away with absolute murder. And they're like
what was the second offence?
Donnarumma building a two-man wall for this Dominic Szoboszlai free kick. What a, like, absolute madness. Like, did he not watch the Arsenal game at the start of the season? You're kind of going,
was David Ryan that criticised for having too big a wall in that occasion?
But like, that was Michael Owen. Like, you're not going to listen to what he says about it.
Joe Hart was talking about this last night and saying that there's not a whole pile Donnarumma could do about this. That,
well,
he could have gone around the wall on the outside as a curler. He could have gone on Donnarumma's near side. So that's your wall. And he said there's kind of like a one shot through the middle, through the outside, with the outside of his boot, where Donnarumma says, "Fair play if you can do it."
When and you see if
fair play,
if
there had been,
if there had been a bigger wall there, definitely would have made, you're going to make his life harder. It's going to make it harder for him. And then Alisson, like, you know, Alisson, who's like, I was saying to you earlier, Mick Hoffman, like, this guy is arguably the best goalkeeper of all time when it comes to one-on-one situations. Like, he has been head and shoulders above every other goalkeeper of his generation for these situations. And to go and do what he did for that penalty kick was just a complete brain fart. Like, it was just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was absolutely mad. And
extraordinary, yeah.
This has all been overshadowed now because of a VAR decision over a goal that really isn't going to matter at the end of the season, because unless it does come down to the goal difference, you know, it's unlikely, isn't it? It's unlikely.
Man City aren't back in the title race. I don't think there's any. I think that's, everyone's getting carried away. It's Arsenal's title.
Do you really think that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think, like, beating Liverpool,
easier fixtures.
The City didn't play well yesterday. I don't think they're really back in the title. I don't think beating Liverpool at the moment is a sign of any real purpose or intent. So while it looks like, and people are excited that there's a title race back on, there isn't really.
A very important text in here from Sean in Dublin before we get to your first story there, Steve-O. This is an update on a story that we brought to you a couple of weeks ago when the rain first started falling in Dublin and it hasn't stopped since. We were telling you, relaying the information coming in, that the Dodder Rhino had been completely submerged in water. Well, Sean in Dublin says, "Owen, I was out for a run along the Dodder over the weekend. I can confirm the Dodder Rhino is alive, well, and well washed. He might need to become a water-based animal unless they can retrieve him." So that is the update on the Dodder Rhino. Great to see he has not suffered the same fate as Fungi the Dolphin. Steve-O, you are starting with Pep Guardiola.
It's also good news in the Dodder as well, because, you know, kind of worried about our rivers being filthy, dirty these days. And, well, if he's clean,
yes,
obviously means the Dodder's clean as well. So good to hear. Pep Guardiola not agreeing with Dion regards to the tight race. He still believes it's on. And he cranked up the pressure on his former assistant, Mikel Arteta, after yesterday's game. The Arsenal boss would have been feeling good about life after his team's comfortable win over a gritty Sunderland side on Saturday to go 9 points clear at the top. Then City went to Anfield, where they had won just once in their previous 22 league visits. Liverpool, who are under pressure to qualify for the Champions League, took the lead with an incredible Dominic Szoboszlai free kick, but then were undone by a Bernardo Silva late strike and injury time penalty scored by Erling Haaland. They are 6 points behind the Gunners, and Guardiola reminded them there's a long way to go.
What I said, 13 games in the Premier League, from my point of view, from my little experience, is a lot of time. A lot. Because it's a problem. When you go in the last games playing, I don't know, and any team playing to be in relegation battle is a proper game, football game, you know, because they live to survive and they give life. They have long weeks to prepare. You come from FA Cup, you come from Carabao Cup, you come from Champions League. That did make a lot of influence of this kind of things, no? Liverpool was all week preparing that game. We played 3 days ago against Newcastle, so... In Newcastle, what happened? Play on Wednesday, travel, arrive at 2 p.m. in Newcastle, I guess. Friday there and Saturday against Brentford. That Brentford have all week to prepare that game. That make an influence in the process, in the final time of the race. That's why being a 9 or 10, 11 points is more difficult. All we can do is be breath in the neck of Arsenal, being there and try if they sleep, if they make a, you know, something, they use it.
So more on this with Carol and Dion after 9 o'clock on the football show. We'll also be touching on Keith Andrews and a continuation of a stunning season at Brentford with their win at St James's Park over the course of the weekend. And it's Newcastle where you want to bring us next, Evo.
Yes, indeed, because, well, it's an interesting fixture list coming up this week in the midweek games. Eddie Howe has been speaking today and has told the media at a pre-match conference that he would resign if he felt he wasn't up to the job. However, the former Burnley and Bournemouth boss has no doubts he is the right person to take Newcastle forward. He watched his side relinquish a first half lead before going on to lose 3-2 against Andrew's team on Saturday. That result came just days after their League Cup title defence ended in a hammering over two legs against Manchester City. So now Newcastle are 5 games without a win in all competitions and sit 12th in the Premier League. Howe admitted he would step aside if he didn't believe he could turn things around.
No, there's no doubt in my mind, and that's why I'm sat here. If there was, then I wouldn't be, because, as I said, the club's the most important thing. So I'd never put myself before the club if I didn't think I was the correct man to take the team forward and I could give the players what they need. Then I would step aside and let someone else do it.
Robin Dublin's been in touch to say, lads, the biggest issue last night was Gary Neville's ridiculous take on commentary. He set the narrative about a simple decision being made correctly and portraying it as a disaster. So,
Sorry, but it's funny, if you're having a wide conversation about VAR wider, like, you know, the Newcastle penalty was one of those things that it was like a coming together, ref looks at it 60 times and, you know, on a screen in super slow motion without the context of the wider shot, they get a penalty. Doesn't really change the result in the end because Brentford get a winner, but I think that's the bigger issue than, you know, ultimately pointless goal at the end of a match. Like, you know, that's the big, for me, advertisement of why there should be no VAR.
Your next story, Steve, was on Tottenham Hotspur. Thomas Frank has been out facing the media since the weekend as well.
Yeah, he insisted today his side are good enough to pick themselves up and stay in the English top flight. Defeat to Manchester United on Saturday has left them 15th in the table and just 6 points off being dragged into the relegation zone. The North London club haven't won in the Premier League since they beat Crystal Palace 1-0 at Selhurst Park on December 28th. They'll be at home against Newcastle tomorrow, who are 4 points above them in 12th. Their last home win, Tottenham that is, was against Brentford on December 6th. They're at home tomorrow night against the Magpies. There was some bad team news ahead of the game as well, with Destiny Udogie ruled out for 4 to 5 weeks with a hamstring injury. The fullback has only played 5 games since his last return from the treatment table. Centre-back Kevin Danso also remains sidelined, but Jed Spence has returned to training with the squad. Frank knows Spurs need an upturn in form.
There's no doubt we're desperate to win games, and I'm focusing on Newcastle tomorrow. That's a great opportunity ahead of us against a good team. That's the main thing. That is, can we go out there and get 3 points tomorrow and climb from there and look forward? That's what we need to do, and that's the main focus.
All right, let's park the Premier League chat there. Let's move on to the League of Ireland, Steve-O, and you're going to kick things off at St Patrick's Athletic.
Yeah, disappointing news from there for them yesterday after that game. The Saints playing out that scoreless draw with Bohemians in the SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division at the Aviva Stadium. The point came at a cost to Saints boss Stephen Kenny, who revealed that Rommel Palmer suffered a setback on his long road to recovery. The playmaker had hamstring surgery last March, and Kenny revealed after the game yesterday he's had a setback with that injury. Another operation hasn't been ruled out, and he looks set for another spell on the sidelines. After the game, Kenny was asked for his thoughts on the occasion, which took place in front of a crowd of over 21,000.
Yeah, it is. It was different. It was sort of unique in that it hadn't got a cup final feeling or anything like that. But I think it's great for the players, and it's great to have over 20,000 at a league game. These are positives, and that is fantastic for the players. I spoke earlier in the season, even though Zach Albacete and Aidan Keane, too, for example, and I could probably mention several others, are under 21 internationals. And all right, Aidan's from Mullingar, he's played most of his football in the city growing up, and Zach did as well. And yet they've never played here. You know, they've never played here, never had the opportunity to play here. And they're 27, 26, 27 now. So it is something that should be embraced, really. Okay, it wasn't a classic today, you know. It wasn't a classic. And you do want it to be better when it is 20,000 at it.
Obviously, the big talking point from yesterday was Stephen Kenny's jumper. It's been getting a lot of airtime on social media, the Pelador, Dennis the Menace range. Also, Bohemians colours, controversially.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was kind of a navy with red
navy,
stripe.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Brian Kerr had one as well, looking really well.
Yes.
He had the old school white with red, or white sleeves with the kind of red down the middle. Brian, and he had her over his dress shirt as well, which I thought gave it an even better look.
Yeah, okay, right. You know? He is a very sartorially elegant man, Brian Kerr. The 20,000 thing, he's obviously framing that as a real positive. Definitely heard people saying that they could have maybe aimed for a bit more than 20,000, that it was maybe an underwhelming tally.
Yeah, like Bowes said at the very start when the thing was announced that they were closing off the top half of the stadium. So maximum was going to be, what, in around 30,000. So I suppose they would have been hopeful they could have got closer to that. In the end, like, there's been so much back and forth between supporters in both clubs about the attendance and the actual playing of the game at the Aviva Stadium. Look, at the end of the day, Bohemians is a members owned club. Everybody knows I'm a Bohemian supporter. I'm not, I could be a judge to be biased here, but this is the basic facts of it. They're a members owned club. They need to think of ways to fundraise for the club. Some of that is to release a lot of football jerseys. Other ways are to have raffles at the end of the year. There's so many different things. And another way of doing it is to have a game at the Aviva Stadium. It was a massive success last year. They had over 30,000 at the game against Shamrock Rovers. That gave a lot of revenue to the club. They also volunteered a percentage of that to Shamrock Rovers as well, which they didn't have to do. And it was the same again for St. Pat's this year. So, look, over 21,000, it's 17 to 18,000 to break even. So the profit wouldn't be as big as last year, but they made some money. And for a members club that doesn't have, a millionaire, billionaire or businessman kind of helping to bankroll the club, that's what you need to do.
You got to sell your soul for a second time, Steve, is what you're saying.
Is the issue, again, I think it's great that there's matches at the Aviva, and I think it's pretty, and I think it's bigger than even just what it does for the Bowes balance sheet. It's about trying to attract people, and we know the state of League of Ireland grounds, and anything where you can actually bring people into a more modern arena where they're actually, you're going to get families, you're going to get people who want to go, that's a good thing. I'd be more concerned, and there's nothing you can do about this in a certain way, but when Stephen Kenny says there, obviously it wasn't that great a game, that's the critical thing. I the League of Ireland has been on the up and up, but they're at an inflection point. Now, they're always at an inflection. They can't be complacent, but they are at a point now where you have to say, right, where is it going? What's going to happen next? Like, Shamrock Rovers are overwhelming favourites. If Shamrock Rovers win the title again this year, it's going to make, it's going to seem a long time since the Shelburne, Damien Duff days. And to have a nil-nil, to have, like, when I saw that last night, my heart sank. It was just like,
yeah,
like, is that it? Is that what you've, now, I don't know, you can't say to, make it more, play more exciting. I demand that you're more excited. It's a league game. You've got to do what you've got to do. But I always remember someone telling me when, after the Italian 90 and Shamrock Rovers moved to the RDS, and there were 20,000 at the RDS for their first game, and it was a nil-nil. And I always remember somebody saying to me that they were sitting there, and as their crowd was leaving, somebody said to them, they won't be coming back.
Mm.
And you've got an obligation. If you're talking about, people need to stop saying, people need to support the local football, which is true, but you've an obligation, if they're coming to support it, to actually give them something worth supporting. And that's, and like, so you can set yourself up tactically because we're going to get a point and we're going to, but you have an obligation to those people to say, right, this is something that you're going to want to support.
Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, you should, the people should be worried, because I think there should be more games. I think that little squabbling between Bowes and Pats is pathetic. There should be more games like that, more games.
The thing is, right, you can do it at the opening game, like from a competitive perspective, you can do it for the opening game because it is the opening game. It's not the middle of the season. I don't think Alan Reynolds will be as keen on, you know, playing like round 15 against St. Patrick's Athletic at the Aviva Stadium, because he's losing that atmosphere, the intimidation maybe for St. Pat's players that you get at Daly Mount Park. It's the opening match of the season. I know, there is still something riding on it. There's still league points, but you're kind of more, I suppose, open to the idea of giving up that advantage of playing at Daly Mount Park for the first match of the season. And look, I take on board, it wasn't a great match. Last year, it was better against Shamrock Rovers. The atmosphere was much better as well. And the atmosphere was better last year because it was a better game, because it was two bigger rivals. You know, obviously everybody knows Bowes and Rovers hate each other. The thing is as well, right throughout the season, there's really good quality games. It was just bad luck. Brighton Palace yesterday, that was absolutely dreadful.
I know that. I'm not saying you can sort it, but it's just something that needs to be in.
It was just unlucky. And like across the board, like the football is good. You know, we did Waterford Shelburne Friday night. That was a really good game. And, you know, we got to watch who I think is going to be one of the great footballing talents emerging at Shelburne in Jack Henry Francis. He was at Arsenal. Damien Duff brought him back here. And this guy, like, we're looking at another Jack Byrne who could probably go on to a higher level than Shelburne. And again, like, if you look to it, like, you've got Victor Osimhen gone to Arsenal for £2 million. Mason Mount gone to Tottenham for £2 million. Slowly but surely, we're starting to see more and more of this stuff happening. So this is the reason why young kids should be going. And they are going. You go to every League of Ireland ground on a Friday night, it's mostly young kids that are at these games. It's not like when you look at a Premier League match on TV and most of the audience watching the games are like men in their, you know, 40 plus who can afford the tickets. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think across the board, it is in a healthy position. It was just really unfortunate that it was a terrible game yesterday and the managers didn't help it. Like, Bowe's tactics yesterday were just...
Well, speaking of, will you give us Alan Reynolds there before the break?
Yeah, well, Bowes boss Alan Reynolds went full banished door for yesterday's match, announcing what was a dummy team of sorts with Patrick Hickey positioned as a striker in the team graphic, but Reynolds played him as a centre-half and then used the kind of false nine tactic against St. Patrick's Athletic. He spoke to our own Ben Symes about this after the game and also about a foul committed by his wing-back, Senan Mullen.
Yeah, but look at me here. It's hard to prepare him for playing, you know, 20,000 in the National Stadium. We can speak about it, but I think some we looked nervous early on, took time to adjust. But they're young lads, if you think of Senan 20, Harry Vaughan 20, so that will stand to them, and it's a welcome to the League of Ireland.
Was your heart in your mouth maybe a little bit at the start there when Senan made the challenge?
No, I didn't. I didn't think it was a red card now. I mean, if that's a red card, you might just go home. So I sound like the Cork hurling manager, do I, giving out about it, but... No, it wasn't. We knew then we had to take him off second half just in case.
We will hear from the Cork hurling manager this hour as well. Brilliant stuff there from Alan Reynolds. We'll also hear about the Super Bowl last night, Winter Olympics, as well as a Six Nations update. So loads still to come on this bumper Monday news round. We'll take a quick break.
The news round on Off the Ball.
Welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to Santa Clara last night. Super Bowl 60 won by the Seattle Seahawks, Evo.
Indeed, and especially good night for the Seattle Seahawks, who put on a devastating defensive display as they beat the New England Patriots by 29 points to 13 at Levi's Stadium. It was a man from London, Aidan Durday, their defensive coordinator, who takes a huge credit for that win. Just the second Super Bowl victory for the Seahawks, who were the winners in 2013 after the game. This is what the MVP, Kenneth Walker III, had to say.
I didn't. You know, this whole week we've been preparing as a team, and it's just another game for us. You know, that's how we felt at the time. You know, we had that one and no mentality, so that's pretty much my mentality going into that. And you know, I just wanted to make a positive impact on the team whichever way I could.
So first running back to win Super Bowl MVP since awesome. Super Bowl 32, Hall of Famer Terrell Davis. Awesome. So it's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been longer than since you've been on the planet. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. But, you know, without coach and, you know, my teammate Sammy and everybody else, that doesn't happen, you know, so I got to give credit to this whole organization, my brothers, and that's how I feel.
Sam, have you seen a different running style out of him, especially since Zach Charbonnet went down for the year? Have you seen something different with him?
To be honest, no. You know, I feel like he's been running like that the entire season. I think, you know, for us this year, just continuing to, like, hammer the details in our offensive line, creating a ton of chemistry together, and our tight ends working together in certain combinations. And this guy just, he goes out there and he just trusts it. He trusts that everyone's going to do his do their job. And I think that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of the story with our team. Everyone just goes out there. We know that everyone else is going to do their job. I just have to do my job.
Yeah, that's Sam Darnold coming in at the end there, which is in itself a remarkable story. The first player to win a Super Bowl. What's say that again?
Nothing.
the first player to win a Super Bowl as a quarterback after playing for four previous teams.
Yeah.
So the road being that kind of sort of uncertain for a player usually predicts that you've not been any good. But for him, he's actually managed to get his career back on track in spectacular fashion.
It's the most remarkable comeback story in NFL history, I would say. I think there's been probably less heralded players have gone on and win Super Bowls and things like that. But for someone who was such a bust, he was drafted number 3 in the draft by the Jets in 2018. And, you know, played there for 3 years, I think. It was a disaster. He just looked like they completely whiffed on their pick. The Jets are the Jets and are going to, you know, bring people down. But at the same time, you bring in these high draft pick quarterbacks to start to change the culture and change it around. And Darnold wasn't ready and he wasn't there. And he went off to Carolina as a backup. And then he went to the San Francisco 49ers as a backup and had a little bit of success there as backup to Brock Purdy. And you were thinking, oh, well, maybe there's a career there. He'll be, you know, he's never going to be a starter. Never mind a Super Bowl winner. And then in year 7, which, you know, things don't start to happen in the NFL in year 7. They're usually out of the league at that stage if they haven't done anything by that stage. Year 7, he goes to Minnesota, 1 year free agent contract as a backup. Their quarterback, rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, gets injured at the start of the season. He plays the whole year. He wins 14 games. Unbelievable. Now, in the last game, to win the number 1 seed, has an awful game. Then in the first round of the playoffs, has an awful game. And you're thinking, right, he did brilliantly, but he's the same old Sam Darnold. Gets picked up by the Seahawks. They put their faith in him. He's going to be the starter. But until wins 14 games again, and then this time, no turnovers in the whole playoffs after having 20 in the regular season. He wasn't amazing last night, but he was good enough. And it's an unbelievable story. He's like, and again, it's not just like a backup comes in, accidentally gets picked. He has earned himself back to being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. It's an unbelievable story.
And obviously the very, very, very famous quote from that Monday Night Football game against the Patriots, the I'm seeing ghosts moment is an incredible point that starts his comeback story. It kind of felt that was the case for Drake May last night. But of course, getting
mentioned that on commentary actually as a little joke at one point. Yeah,
right. I didn't steal it off commentary. So I missed that piece. But it wasn't just the 6 sacks; it was everything around that. Like once you've taken that amount of punishment behind your offensive line, he was clearly in his own head at this point. And some of his open looks that he missed were absolutely unforgivable at Super Bowl level last night. I think we're going to hear from Drake May now, actually, Steve-O.
Yeah, pretty emotional, Drake May, who was just asked about the possibility that it could be the last time that all of that particular team are going to be in the dressing room together.
Yeah, it's hard to have that sink in right now. You know, hopefully a lot of the same faces are here. I'm making sure the business, I know it won't be like that, but this team was awesome. Yeah, he was a heartbeat, no doubt about that. He was he's the reason why we're here. He's always the same, and look forward to, you know, my relationship with him for a long time. He's a great person and hell of a football coach.
Yeah, he just went on top of Mike Vrabel there, the Patriots coach.
You are a Patriots fan, Mick. Yeah, you're actually wearing a Patriots zippy. I just realized.
Yeah, got the merch.
Top today, just, you know, you can't hide in defeat either, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Villa, bad weekend for Villa as well. It's been,
leave me alone.
give us your verdict on Bad Bunny.
It's good away point for Villa, I would have said.
But there's a good away point for Bad Bunny.
Yeah, Bad Bunny. I'm uninterested in the Super Bowl halftime show. I don't mean to be an old like curmudgeon about it. I'm watching the game. No, I'm not, because I appreciate its cultural value and the fact that it's bringing in such a wide audience, and that for many people that's what the Super Bowl is and so on. I don't have an issue with it existing. I just don't have an interest in it when it's on. I'm thinking about the fact that you're watching a game. It's at the halfway point in any sport, but this is like the biggest game in that sport. And it disappears, and it disappears from consciousness even. It just goes away for like nearly an hour.
Ah, no.
It was.
Halftime.
Sure. Halftime's only about 30 minutes, isn't it?
So I'm pretty sure it went to halftime at like quarter to two our time, and it came back on at 20-3.
Is it that long? I'd have put down it's 30 minutes.
Well, maybe it was a little bit less.
I remember the analysts on Sky are even saying the halftime break extends by, it's like 2.5 to 3 times more than the normal halftime.
The performance is 12 minutes. The performance is 12 minutes.
Yeah, but there's a lot more.
I know there's a lot more around it.
Yeah, and all the ads and so on. Anyway, what I'm saying is, it was grand. I'm sitting there on my phone during it waiting for the game to come back. I don't know if... I imagine most sports fans feel that way. If you're into a sporting event,
you don't really care
what's going on at halftime.
You can be into multiple things. You can be really into the sport, and then you can be really into the music at halftime.
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
I'm not really into it.
The crowd at Aviva Stadium would have appreciated Bad Bunny at halftime yesterday.
No, they wouldn't. The Aviva would be half empty at halftime, even if Bad Bunny was in top form there. Were you watching Bad Bunny last night?
I was not watching Bad Bunny. I'm just marvelling as somebody who goes to sleep about 10 o'clock. And, like, if it's a late night, if I'm awake at 11 o'clock, I'm like, how can you get to the half two in the morning? Okay, but if you like Bad Bunny, that's fine. But it's like, how did you get past that like hump to the other side? If it's going on for an hour, I'd be like, if I made it to half two, I'd be like, I can't keep going.
I can't most years.
So is that 8 o'clock in the morning thing we're talking about is looming large, you know? Like, it's actually going to be 8 o'clock in the morning in a second. And reality is coming in. And I'd be like, I can't do this anymore.
Steve, give me something on Bad Bunny.
And you know what the funny thing is? I've lost count of the amount of times I've watched the Super Bowl and fallen asleep, you know, in the first or second quarters, because I'm not the biggest gridiron fan. And last night, I stayed away for the whole, and the mad thing was, it was one of the worst Super Bowls has been, like, from a an excitement perspective. Was the classic one for the purists. And it was, and then the halftime, and I was like really curious to see Bad Bunny, whose music I've heard but I've not seen him performing. I thought it was really good. I thought he was brilliant. I thought it was really good, and it kind of reminded. I was saying this to you earlier on. We were chatting about it. I'm big into record. I collect a lot of records. We collect them for 20 odd years, and I've got a fair bit of like kind of Cuban jazz and funk stuff, and also have you ever heard Ray Barreto? He's like this famous Puerto Rican musician who grew up in the Bronx back in the 1920s, 1930s, and came really big in the 60s and 70s, this brilliant Latina jazz sound, and it really reminded me of that. It was like that combined with like maybe Brazilian samba, and of course the kind of the reggae influence there as well. I thought it was really good, and it looked amazing. And it also, I thought the camera work on it was really interesting. It was like he was looking down at the audience on screen, which I thought was an interesting perspective. It was almost, it was just, I don't know whether he kind of came up with that or what kind of message he was trying to get across, but he certainly got a message across at the end, didn't he, with all the flags from all the different South American nations and all that kind of thing, which is a real kind of, I suppose, maybe a soft protest, would you say, against what's going on?
What is America? It's not just the United States.
The entire thing was made a lot more enjoyable by the fact that all the right people were freaking out about it.
And it's true.
Hated it. And the counter-programming that was put on.
Such as you. I mean, you were there on your phone.
The counter-programming. It wasn't broadcast by
your burner account was going
to broadcast.
He did also give his Grammy Award. Did you see that?
To a child, yeah.
That kid, you know who the kid was?
Sorry, I didn't know.
The kid was picked up by ICE. He's only 5 years of age.
And moved to Texas.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I saw the wrinkle that the married couple was a real wedding.
He actually married someone.
Yeah.
People got married during that live show, yeah.
I didn't know that, the kid aspect.
That's, absolutely amazing. Fair play to him.
Can we do some rugby? You've got an injury update on Ireland after round one of the Six Nations.
Yeah, short and sweet update. Prop Tadhg Furlong has resumed full training. A decision will be made on his availability ahead of Thursday afternoon's team announcement for Saturday's clash with Italy. Uncapped Ulster back row Bryn Ward has also rejoined the squad after featuring for Ireland A against England at Thomond Park last Friday. The Azzurri, of course, will be buoyant coming to Dublin after beating Scotland, while Ireland need to bounce back after that heavy defeat in France. Italy have recalled Toulouse wing Angie Cabuzzo to their squad ahead of Saturday's trip to Dublin. The 26-year-old, who has scored 16 tries in 31 caps, has not played since December because of a finger injury.
Are we worried after Italy on Saturday?
Yeah, I think Ireland are unlikely to lose to Italy at the Aviva. I think if we were going to Rome this weekend, I think there'd be a little bit of concern for sure. Italy are a good side. We kind of known that for a couple of years now. I don't know why people were mad surprised that I was in Rome 2 years ago when they beat Scotland. And it was class just walking around with, like, you know, shared the hotel with a load of kilt-wearing Scots who were just, like, utterly devastated. It was great fun. So I wasn't, like, massively surprised that Saturday happened. But Scotland are Scotland and Italy are decent. But I think Ireland are...
It is. The momentum is big in sport, though, as we know. And Italy got momentum, Ireland don't. So that's...
The texts are flooding in asking for Dion Fanning to apologise for his note of optimism last week.
I thought everyone would forget. The whole point of that prediction was you only remember it if it comes off.
Yeah.
I walked out of there with my head held high saying, no one will ever mention this again unless Ireland win.
Well, you got to give us an updated prediction. Ireland versus Italy this weekend. What's happening, Dion?
Oh, Ireland to win again.
Yes, two from two. you have an update on England as well, Steve-O.
Yeah, their wing, Emmanuel Feyo-Oboso, has been ruled out of Saturday's match against Scotland. I could miss the entire Six Nations. He suffered a hamstring injury in training last week, missing the win over Wales. He's due to see a specialist, but the Exeter player will miss the Calcutta Cup game at Murrayfield, and it appears doubtful he'll be in return in time to feature again in the Championship.
Let's move on to the hurling.
Yeah, Limerick off the mark in Division 1A of the National Hurling League own the Kep Kilkenny at arm's length to run out 126-216 winners at the TUS Gaelic grounds yesterday. Waterford have their second victory of the campaign. They were too much for Offaly, coming away from Walsh Park with a 119-16 point win. Clare have joined Wexford on top of Division 1B with their third win out of three. They were far too good for Down and came away with a 335-15 points win in Ennis. Kildare have their first win in the division thanks to a 321-20 point victory at home to Antrim. But let's go back to those Cork hurling manager comments referenced by Bo's boss, Alan Reynolds. Ben O'Connor had social media chattering when he said this to Shane Dawson on RTE after their 29-22 win against Tipperary on Saturday.
No, I just want to know why he blew us up 3 minutes early.
So,
the Bishop of Shamas was starting in 32 or 33 minutes and it was blown up. I just want to know why we didn't play on after that. Only thing I asked him.
We were told it was contributing to a melee. That's the reason for the sendings off. Would you have complaints with that?
No, but was there anyone hurt? No. And there was pushing and shoving. That's all I saw going on there again, try pushing and shoving between two teams. They were meant to have a go at it.
There was a lot of talk in the build-up to this match as well, considering your comments post-match last week. Are you encouraging your players to play on the edge and to bring a bit of extra intensity?
What other county aren't on the edge? Everyone's on the edge. And so, yes, we're saying play on the edge because everyone's on the edge. That's the way the game's supposed to be played. And just to go back to my comments last week, referees are under too much pressure. Red cards, yellow cards, technical areas. They're under too much pressure. Let him go away and referee the match the way they see it and not be an assessor on the send, put him under pressure, then after, oh, you didn't tick this box, you didn't tick that box. That's all I'm saying. That's what every GA person in the country wants. Good, hard, physical game. Micro saving lives and eyes all over the country with helmets. We're supposed to be playing the fastest field game in the world. If I'm running at you at full belt and you come at me, small, slight little turn and flick in the head. Fellas roaring for red cards and yellow cards, that's what the helmets are for. No fellas getting built down the head deliberately. All we're looking for the game to be let flow.
Do you go along with this, Mick?
I don't know.
Let it flow.
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. And his stuff about, like, the Shamaza, like, you could have an argument about, like, them all being Egypts and what, like, you know, that lasting for 5 minutes is, like, kind of pathetic in its own way. But the idea of, like, how you deal with that is by having to send off people that haven't done anything necessarily violent or anything like that, I think is a fair argument. I think you could have, you know, a dichotomy of feelings on that one. On the on the assessors and all. It's funny, I do think sometimes we police a game based on what journalists or people on social media feel about it that aren't necessarily overly involved, whereas I do feel that when you have something like an entire playing pool feeling a certain way about, maybe it is like the helmet, the hitting the head rule or something like that, I'd be always reticent to say they're wrong. You know what I mean? Because we all think that, you know, say the Let It Flow, you know, the John Keenan Munster final a few years ago, you know, everybody involved in the game thought that was great, but there was plenty of people kind of like wanting to come on radio shows and say it was a disgrace and that that can't be the game. It's like, who do you listen to in that regard? It obviously should be the people who are involved in the game and know the sport and know what's dangerous and what's not.
Yeah.
But I do think sometimes we can get a little bit preachy about those things. And I see where he's coming from on that. Yeah. The second point.
Is it hurling lost its way, Dion?
Undoubtedly. Well, I liked what he was saying there. It is a physical game. I think this idea, I didn't know that they've now got assessors sitting in the stands and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, don't do that. Like, as I said to Joe Brawley on our podcast recently, when he started making a case for video in Gaelic football, I was like, I'm here from the future to tell you, don't do that. You know, don't go down that road. Like, just don't start bringing all those layers in terms of,
yeah.
Like, I think the valid point there, and again, it comes back to this thing, let referees make mistakes. Let referees stop saying you can sit in the stand and say this person has got this right, this wrong. The point is the referee makes a decision and you live with it. That's
yeah.
What, now, you know, culturally
and shout
Gaelic games
them.
can't always live with decisions referees make. So that's a different.
But when
matter.
Did we get to the point? It's like it's not necessarily really going back to the football. But if you're bringing it into GA now, or if Joe suggested that, when did we get to a point that a bad decision is more important than the way the game has been played or the way the sport has been designed, which in the case of both GAA sports and football is for continuous play for 35 minutes,
yeah, hopefully,
45
hopefully
minutes,
never.
Whatever. Yeah, but why are we even having this argument? Why did we ever have it in the first place in football? Like, literally what football had against all the other big sports in the world was continuous play. Do you remember it was the whole American USA 94, how are we going to do this with no ad breaks and so on? Because that's the way the sport's designed, and they just threw it away overnight in 2017 or whatever. They just decided this isn't the case anymore. I just don't understand how we would then do it to Gaelic Games.
Just before we get to the Winter Olympics as a final story, Steve, I just want to burst my own bubble here. Community notes on this post that had gone around about Bad Bunny's halftime show.
Oh, here we go.
Clarify from Bad Bunny's team that it was in fact a child actor, Lincoln Fox, who's a 5-year-old from California, who was cast for his resemblance to a young Bad Bunny who picked up that Grammy Award. It had nothing to do with any child that was detained by ICE.
Jeez, so. I got a full 2 days without being fooled by something on the internet.
Whereas the Kid Rock concert actually had people being detained by ICE.
did that actually happen in the end?
The Kid Rock thing, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. It wasn't broadcast in a lot of the places that said they would for licensing issues.
Because
I don't want to get involved in this.
That was on shaky ground as well for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it happened. Yeah, I don't know. Don't know how many watched.
If you were watching Kid Rock last night, I hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you listened to the show.
Winter Olympics is a final point.
Yep. American skier Lindsey Vonn has had surgery on a left leg fracture after a bad injury sustained at the Winter Olympics on in what could be her final Olympic event. She crashed in the women's downhill competition in Cortina in Italy. Incredibly, Vonn was going for gold despite rupturing a knee ligament just 9 days ago. The 41-year-old was airlifted off the piste to a hospital in Treviso, which was a 130-kilometre trip following lengthy treatment. The two-time world champion had successfully completed 2 training runs on the iconic course prior to Sunday's crash. In a social media post, the US ski and snowboard team said Vonn was in a stable condition.
Yeah, it's obviously a fairly visceral TV when you can hear the screams being beamed out to you live. But also to be airlifted twice from the course in the space of 9 days is pretty insane. I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of what actually happened here when you know, the full story is told. But I see a lot of people conflating the two things immediately. It's like she crashed because of her knee.
And they're also saying definitively the other way as well, that they're unrelated. Whereas I don't think we can know that because obviously if she's in a lot of pain or in her head about this injury, it could lead to a mistake or so on. So we don't know. But I think the point is from all of this is that these top level sports people are insane. Like, you know, it's like the Olympic dream is what it is, but you've torn your ACL off. Why are you still doing this? You know, but I suppose they just live in a different plane than us.
Well, you know the way, like, you know, rugby is held up as this kind of comparison to football. You know, rugby people go, you know, these bloody footballers get a little kick and they're rolling around the ground. Look at this rugby guy with blood streaming down his face and his head bandaged and all. Look at these are proper. Like, this would be like, you know, the skiing community to rugby people. You say, look at that bloody rugby player with a torn ACL hobbling off the pitch like a big baby. Look at this skier. Yeah. Look at Lindsay Vonn here. She's torn ACL. She's going for a gold medal. Fractured leg.
Yeah, I've got no sympathy for you unless a helicopter is taking you off the field of play, basically, is my stance on it all. Have you been watching much of the Winter Olympics?
Not yet.
No? We're just...
We watched a bit of curling out there during the build-up to this.
The curling, the bit of speed skating going on earlier on. We watched a couple of the luge on Saturday, which is actually one of the more uneventful of all the events.
The Americans falling out of their bobsled.
That was hilarious. Yeah, that was...
So the driver went on, not realising that everyone behind him had fallen out.
Yeah.
So they just got up the side of the track.
It's like somebody scoring a goal after their offside flag has gone up. Yeah, yeah. He's delighted with how things have started. Wow, it seems like we're moving
where
really
are my friends?
Lively here.
Celebrating with me.
Or the horse with no rider running. That's it. The Grand National.
He's won the great, like the horse beaming from ear to ear because he's won the National, and little does he know that he doesn't count. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mick, thank you for popping in, Dion. You'll be back after 9 o'clock for the football show. We'll take a quick break.